Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You are listening to the Green Egg Radio Hour. I'm Ariel Montserrat.
And I'm Sylvie Salou. Our special guest tonight is Tish Owen, a woman of abundance who resides in Nashville, Tennessee with her husband Patrick, and a very silly cat who bosses everyone, a baby cat who bosses the silly cat, and an African gray parrot who is much smarter than most humans in the room. She loves her life and is grateful for more things than there is time to speak of, but we're going to try.
Tish is a daughter, a mother, a grandmother, a wife, a friend, and owner of the Goddess and the Moon shop in Nashville, which was established in 1991. You can find her shop at 603 8th Avenue South in Nashville, Tennessee. She's a published author, a seamstress, a sailor, and a brewer. Tish has long been recognized as an authority in the area of psychic phenomena and occult activity, and she's lent her expertise to occult crime investigations.
She is the coordinator of the Pagan Unity Festival, now in its 15th year, which is the largest festival in the Mid-South. The festival is a four-day event which brings in pagan authors that many in the area have never gotten a chance to see in person, such as Oberon Zell Ravenheart and Dorothy Morrison and Merv Sellers.
Tish reads tarot cards professionally. Her down-to-earth manner of laying out the situation and her good advice has kept clients coming back to her for over 18 years. She also uses other divination tools, such as numerology, pendulum, graphology, and palmistry.
Tish is a media staple in Nashville, appearing on WWTN, WLAC, WRVW, WRLT, and WSM Radio. The Morning News with Larry Britton, Channel 4 News at 6 and 10, The Talk of the Town in CMT's Gone Country. Her latest project, Mystic Coffee, aired on December 20th at 9 p.m. on local Channel 19, and it can also be seen on YouTube for those living beyond the Nashville area. Mystic Coffee is a TV program that brings you information about all things body, mind, and spirit. Tish has also been featured in the Tennessean, the Nashville Scene, Nashville Lifestyles Magazine, and other local publications. Tish is also in the midst of building a pagan church.
Welcome, Tish.
Hi, wow, y'all make me sound brilliant.
Well, you are. And very busy as well. I mean, look at all
these
projects.
That.
Yeah. See, you're so busy, you don't even have time to figure out how busy you are.
That's true. If I could get somebody to do that for me, it would be awesome.
Yeah, hey, there you go.
There you go.
So, Tish, do you want to tell us about the church project that you're working on?
Well, I kind of feel like, for a long time I felt like, for us to ever be taken seriously as a movement, a religious movement, that we had to kind of come out of the living room and the basement and the garage and the park, and we had to have brick and mortar to be taken seriously by people outside of ourselves. And so the idea that kind of grew in my head for a little while, and about this time a year ago, I went to an event, a winter event in Arkansas, and everybody there was Aquarian Tabernacle people.
Huh.
And everywhere I turned, somebody was saying, "You got to do this. You got to do this." And so I kept getting cornered at, you know, breakfast and lunch and dinner, and finally I was like, "Okay, fine." You know, enough of the beat me over the head, I'll actually start to listen. So I did, and we sat down, we talked late into the night, and I contacted Church of All Worlds, and Church of All Worlds, oh my, Aquarian Tabernacle, and got the information, and we filled out paperwork, and we sent it off to the IRS, and we sent, you know, you've got to do it locally as well, and we're just taking tiny itty bitty baby steps. We've had a couple of events that we've celebrated for the high days, and we're starting to kind of put together a coalition of people that are going to be helpful and that are also going to enjoy this time as we go forward. And then, and we're putting a lot of ideas as to what we'd like to do, besides that we're going to be a church. What does that actually mean, and what does it actually do? And how do we go about putting the word out, which is not hard because all you got to do is put it on Facebook and get people who are serious about this, and that we're going to be a grown-up religion.
So now, is this going to be like for people in Nashville, or is this going to be an online church, or?
It's going to be a physical church. It's going to be for people in, well, anybody that wants to show up, but centered in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we're looking for, we're just looking for space. That's kind of what we're, everybody's on the lookout for.
All right. So now, and do you have a name for this church yet?
It's called the Sanctuary of Light.
Sanctuary of Life. Wonderful name.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a name I've been carrying around for probably a good 10 years and just kind of was waiting the opportunity to have
yes,
to use it.
To use it, yeah. I have a couple of those. I know exactly what you're talking about. Names needing projects.
Exactly. Have name, will travel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Tish, I know you've done some paranormal investigations in the past. Pardon my tongue, it's not with me tonight. You've done some paranormal investigations in the past, and I'd like to ask you if you have ever had an experience that scared you or those who accompanied you.
I don't think I've ever had been scared. Sometimes I've been a little frustrated, or not frustrated exactly, frustrated, but more about, okay, so how do we go forward? How do we proceed? But we went with a bunch of people down to a place that started out as a house, down in, dare I say, it was down Hole-in-Wall, and it had been a doctor's office, and then it became this clinic, and there were a lot of interesting things that happened in that clinic, and then it became, I guess, a rooming house or an apartment building, and when we went down with this group, it was empty, and had been empty because nobody could live there, because weird, freaky things happened. And we went through it with, and you've got a bunch of people, so there's a whole lot of people muddying up the energy anyway. But we got some very interesting pictures of things that had been, it was one particular place that on the film it showed a doorway, but when you ran your hand and touched it, there was absolutely no doorway there. And so it was kind of interesting, and you felt a little of this and you heard a little of that. And so everybody was oohing and aahing, you know, and everybody was all blown away by it. So I thought, well, and I was still smoking at the time, or at least I took up smoking. But anyway, I went outside. I was sitting next door and at a picnic table, and I was having a cigarette. And all of a sudden, I just felt this, the house is done with y'all. About that time, people came still out of that house like it was on fire. Because they had one of the machines that picks up the actual vocals. And you can make sense of what you're being told. And what they were being told was, get out, get out, get out.
Yeah.
And so it didn't scare me, but I did get tickled because everybody was running. So that was, yeah. So. And so I was like, well, I guess we can go home now because the house is done. It had put up with as much of us as it could possibly put up with, and it was done. So very interesting.
Wow.
Wow.
That is pretty weird.
It was pretty weird. It was very weird. So, but it was. It's always interesting. And you know, we've got up here. You don't know, maybe not, but we have a very old cemetery, and it's the city cemetery. It's in the middle of Nashville, and of course, it, you know, when it was first turned for graves, it was the edge of Nashville, and a lot of cholera victims went into graves when we had a cholera epidemic here.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, I mean, they just flung them in the ground because they were trying to keep this terrible disease from spreading.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of unrest. You can walk through there, and, I mean, there's just, there's a lot of people walk around that cemetery. It's very interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It just sounds pretty scary.
You know what, though? It's not the dead ones that are, you need to be scared of. It's the live ones.
Well, yeah.
Yep. So, then, Tish, that brings us to the question of, do you believe in evil spirits? And do you think this was an evil spirit that you got hold of?
I think yes, I do, because, you know, there's good and evil in the world, and anybody that tells me that there's not, I think that they probably need some sort of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that there was anything particularly evil in that house. There was some creepy stuff. But when you've got things that are going on and bad things that are being done, entities
mm-hmm.
are drawn to that,
yeah.
That energy. And
mm-hmm.
so I don't know that I felt per se that there was something in that place that had been evil, or that was evil, an evil entity, but evil had been done there. And
mm-hmm.
so that there was that, and I didn't feel scared or scary, but then I kind of go into a lot of those situations kind of almost, I hate to use the word, but scientifically. I go in with, first of all, a real healthy skepticism,
mm-hmm.
and I walk in standing in a place of disbelief. You have to prove it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then
sure.
there's a lot of places, not a lot of places, I don't want to say that. We have people that come and see us in my store on a regular basis that feel like they have something in their house that's evil. And we do what we can to help them get rid of it.
Mm.
Well, when people pass on, do you think that they retain their sort of an emotional center like what we have in, you know, in the bodies we're in now?
I think some of them do, and I think they do it for a certain period of time. So I will tell you this story. My grandfather, my mother's father, died when I was 15 years old. And he was an extremely strong individual. He was a character. And everybody in the family since who has passed away, that I've been there when it happened, he showed up to collect them.
No.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, I mean, he is exactly who he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the day will come, I feel, that he'll go forward and maybe reincarnate, but I feel like his time is not yet. But, yes, I feel like very much he is the same man he was when he was in the body.
Wow. That is really wild. That's really sweet, you know? And it's really comforting.
It's very comforting. And my
mm-hmm.
mother, he just turned 96 this in the month of December, was very ill in April. And she had the flu and pneumonia, which is, you know,
whoa.
She had every opportunity in the world to die, and she didn't take it.
Yeah.
But he never showed up, and I knew she was not going to pass because he was never, and I was there day and night, and he never showed up.
Now, when he shows up, does he show up usually before the person passes over or right
yes.
after?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right. Wow.
So you got some warning prior to
yeah, well, you usually kind of know anyway that he's, you know, this is fixing to come to a grinding halt. But yeah, he shows up.
How much before the person dies, how long before the person dies does he show up?
Usually a couple of days you feel him, or a day. I mean, usually, I'm going to say 24 to 48 hours.
Wow.
That you feel him be there, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is a very interesting phenomenon, and I don't think that we're the only people in the world that experience it. I'm sure there's lots of people out there that folks
mm-hmm.
come and, you know, pick up their family members.
Yeah, but they just don't talk about it because they're afraid everybody will think they're nuts, you know. And
yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
know, quite often people do think that, you know.
Well, you know, I don't have to worry about that because people already think I'm crazy, so.
Well, I don't.
I tell everybody I meet right out of the gate, okay? Look, I'm a harmless kook, all right? I know I'm weird. You know, we got a big Twilight Zone sign on the front of our house. I mean.
You should have business cards made.
That is really amazing. So you're, what is the name of this spirit? Of your,
what,
the guy that
it?
Shows up. He's your uncle.
He's my grandfather.
He's your grandfather.
And he's my grandfather.
Got it. And what is his name?
His name is
Leonard. Okay,
don't laugh. You can't laugh. It's not funny. His name is Oaf Simpson. O-A-F.
Mm-hmm.
He's honest to God. I know. Isn't that sad? And my mother always says, well, they meant to name him Olaf. And I said, yes, but they didn't.
Oh, my God. Spelled it wrong or something, yeah.
God love him. Something went very terribly wrong.
Yeah.
And so he was a plumber until he had, you know, little uniforms and little shirts. And his name tag always was initial O and initial F, Simpson. Well, he didn't have an initial F. He didn't have a middle name.
Wow.
Isn't that bizarre?
I don't blame him.
That is just
God
wild.
Love him.
Thank you for sharing your family story with us, Tish. I think that's just lovely. It's wonderful.
Gives you a little insight,
doesn't
it? Yeah. Well, you know, what a nice thing to know that when you die, whenever that is, someone's going to be there to help guide you through and comfort you and whatnot, you know.
That does give you faith, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
When my mother passed on, I take it as it was happening because my dad was in Nashville. She was at St. Thomas Hospital.
Yeah.
I was out in the yard planting flowers. And there was a lapse in time there somewhere, but I just saw my mother walking up to, actually two people greeted her. And they were just wearing, you know, just like plain old white gowns. And
wow.
They took her on each side and walked her on into the light. And an hour later, my dad pulls up in my driveway, and he gets out and he comes to tell me, he says, your mama's gone. And that was about the time it would take to leave the hospital and get to where I lived.
Drive to your house, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Isn't that awesome, though?
It is. Yeah. That's something I'll never forget.
Yeah. Oh, that's just amazing. So, Tish, what is your favorite form of divination? I mean, obviously you have people appear to you, you know, things like that. So I'm assuming you have a couple of different...
What I use primarily, though, is a deck of tarot cards.
Uh-huh.
That's what works for me. That's what I like. That's where I started a long time ago. And I used to say, gosh, I know these things, but there's a lot of information and it all seems to be flying at me. I wish I could find a way to hone in on it. And somebody put a deck of tarot cards in my hand and I went, oh.
Wow.
That's how you do that. So I use a pendulum sometimes. I play a little bit with palmistry. I've got a great, fabulous antique magnifying glass that I got for my birthday a couple of years ago. It's awesome, and I can look at their lines and kind of tell them what I'm seeing, and but primarily tarot cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any particular deck that you like to use?
I've got five decks that I like. Right now I'm using the Goddess Tarot, which I'll use it until I wear out the deck, and then I'll do something else. Before that I was using, I want to call it the New Llewellyn Tarot, but it's not, it's about 5 years old. But it's a Llewellyn deck, and it's not made by, you know, Jane Smith, and it's being produced by Llewellyn. Llewellyn had an artist and had this deck developed. It's very Welsh in its place names and in its people names, and it's just a really fabulous deck. And I've got it, and I have just wore it out. You can barely shuffle it. It's like shuffling pieces of cloth. And so I like those two decks. I also like the Morgan Greer quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the new Paladini as well. So there's about four or five decks that I like, and I just kind of rotate through them. I'm not one of those people like I can only use this deck right here. But
yeah.
I like to play with different ones. So, and I've got Robin Wood. Robin Wood. I love the Robin Wood deck, too.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've not ever used it. That's really a beautiful one.
It's a beautiful deck. I really, really like that deck.
Yeah. It's very pretty. So now, do you do phone or email readings? And how can someone contact
you? I do. Primarily, I do... well, primarily I do in person, but if I'm doing it not in person, phone. But I've also done some with, like, email, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, I really kind of do, well, I hate to call it stream of consciousness, but I don't know what else to call it. When I start to read and I just start, you know, flipping out and telling you stuff and or flipping the cards and stuff. Sometimes flip out, but not always. But flipping the cards and telling you what I see, and you can't... I can't do that when I'm doing an email reading. So I have to flip the card, see what I get, type it in.
Mm-hmm.
Because this stuff goes away. I don't retain it. You know, it gets gone pretty quick.
Yeah.
And so so it's kind of interesting, but I get the same information. It's just a little bit different way of delivering it. So,
mm-hmm.
But I read for people. As a matter of fact, I did a couple of readings by phone today.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, my theory is that phone lines were built for communication, and that's what you're doing. You're communicating. It really kind of hooks you and the person up. I feel the same way about radio. When you do radio, and
mm-hmm.
you're doing readings on radio, it's like you have this, you know, it's like that big antenna or whatever. It's pulling all that information. It's kind of cool.
Well, speaking of radio, would you be willing to give a demonstration of what a reading would be like on the radio? I mean, perhaps
well, gosh,
aerial...
I just happen to have my card.
All right.
Have cards will travel.
Perhaps Ariel will ask a question and
okay.
See how that
well,
comes
Ariel
out.
Ask a question.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready when you are.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I think of a question here. I know. Do you want me to tell you the question on air?
Sure. If you want,
oh.
I mean, this is
okay.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Okay. I just got slammed with a $5,500 bill to the IRS.
What do? Okay.
Didn't know I owed. So. How should I handle this, or what's my best course of action? Well,
have you talked to a lawyer?
No, I'm going to talk to a tax advocate, though. So that's
okay.
Maybe not the best way to
okay.
How will this work for me? Will this work in my favor, or am I going to be able to get, you know, some of this taken off?
I think you're going to get some of it. The first card that comes up is the Justice card, which is very interesting, isn't it? Because
oh, yeah.
Before you say anything, I flip the Justice card out.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you need to talk to the person that I see, I guess is a tax advocate.
Yes.
He feels very lawyer-ish to me. He's very smart. He's down to earth. Don't expect him to, like, crack jokes and whatever. He's very serious. But he's also very smart, and he's good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that you're going to be able to get some of this. Because you don't feel like this is just, do you?
No, this is from, I had a retirement account at a place where I worked for the county, and I had to quit because I went on stress leave, and I couldn't work for a whole year, so I had to dig into my retirement account. Well, you have to pay $2,500 for that, and on top of that, there's a $2,500, you know, late fee for it, because this happened quite some time ago. And California's hurting for money, so I guess they're out trying to collect it. But I talked to a friend of mine years ago when this was about to happen, who was an attorney, who said, if you're doing it because you have bad health, then, you know, if you do the paperwork, then you can get, you don't have to pay this. Because I only worked three months that year.
Well, and not only that, but you didn't even know that this was in the works.
No.
You know, that they were going to slam you with this. So I
mm-hmm.
feel like you're going to get some of it taken off. They're going to want some of their money, though, believe me.
Okay.
but not as bad as what you just went through. Oh my God, are you kidding? $5,000? What? So it's not going to be as bad at all. It's not going to be as bad. So,
okay.
You know, you didn't do it just because you just wanted the money. You did it because you had no choice.
Yeah.
So we have to bring your health into it. So yeah, go talk to this guy. Like I said, he's very serious.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also very smart. He knows what he's doing. I feel like your outcome is going to be okay. Not going to make, you know, it's not, they're not going to say, oh, never mind. No hits, no fouls. You don't have to pay anything. They're not going to say that. But they are going to allow it to be less money.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to have to fight for it. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's that?
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You're very welcome. I'm sorry. You owe them money.
Yeah, in December, I got this 2 days before my birthday, and it's Christmas time.
Oh, happy birthday.
And the stove had just gone out, so there was $400. I mean, it's, you know, it all happens at Christmas.
It always does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's going to be okay. You're not going to be deliriously happy. But
okay.
You're going to be a whole lot happier than $5,000, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's just ridiculous, you know?
That's crazy.
It is crazy. Our taxes are at, anyway, that's a whole other topic. Don't get me started on the IRS.
Don't get me started. No, really.
They're
not your friend.
You'll be here all night. Anyway, so, Dawn, did you want to ask a question?
Well, I was wondering about Tish's plans to write another book on, she did Chasing the Rainbow, and she's supposed to be doing a follow-up book, and I was wondering what this one would include that the first one did not.
Well, it's not really a follow-up. It's a, I don't know, it's a re-release maybe? It's going to still be called Chasing the Rainbow. It's just going to have some added, updated. And so one of the things that I had talked about with my publisher, which is Willow Tree Press, so we get them a little, you know, get them a little, plug in here, was that I felt that, having done this now for 15 years, that I really needed to expand the section about your staff and have an honest-to-goodness handbook. You're going to be on staff, you need to read this. And not only that, but you're going to be on staff, first of all, A, you need to read this book, which I found out a lot of festivals are doing. They're buying Chasing the Rainbow for all the members of their staff and making them read it.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of gratifying. It's very gratifying. But
yeah.
That there would need to be, there needs to be a more expanded, here is what we expect from you as staff. And it's really hard work to be staff on a festival the size of ours. We had 401 people last year, and that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of work, and it's really hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say we don't have fun, because we do. We have a lot of fun. But it's hard work, and they've got to know going in that they're going to work, that for however many days your festival is, ours is 4. And I tell people, because I'm taking some new people on staff this year, and they get a tryout. They get a one-year tryout. And if they don't do well, then they don't come back next year. And I want them to understand that you're going to work harder than you've ever worked in your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you dig ditches for a living.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to work harder. So that's primarily, I mean, I'm going to revisit some of the stuff and some of the recipes, and I'm going to add some things about how we're doing our child, I don't want to call it child care because it's not child care, but how we take care of people's kids and the activities and whatever, because this year we have decided to break the kids up into 4 different segments. So we're going to have little kids from 3 to 7. We're going to have 8 to 12. We're having 12 to 14, which is the tweens. And then we'll have 15 and up, 15, 16, 17, 18 as the teenagers. So.
Wow, that's great.
So that's going to be different. Well, it's good. I think it's really good. And that way everybody's taken care of, everybody's having a good time, I hope. And we can have different activities for all of them, because we kind of threw the 13, 14-year-olds in with the other kids, and the older kids were not nice to them, or they were like they were being bothered, You know, they're like, they're being followed around by little kids, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, teenagers are. So we're gonna make that a little different.
Hmm.
So we're going to add all that into the book, and it'll be a little bit bigger book, and hopefully we'll cover everybody's... I hope that we hit everybody's needs. We try to.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, accommodate everything.
We try. You know, there's always a question. Somebody always has a question, though, every year that you haven't heard. That you know, there's really, you know, somebody always is willing to play stump the chump with me. You know, and they'll come up with something, and I'll be like, wow, nobody's ever asked me that question. I thought I'd heard everything.
Yeah, really, just when you think you've heard it all.
Yeah,
somebody
you've got it figured out, yeah.
Well, we're pagan. We're all marched to the tune of a different drummer, so, yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're pretty good at nailing jello to a tree.
I don't know if that's true, but, you know, I think if you get a big enough hammer, you can do it. That's what we're, you know, that's what I'm working on. So, yeah, that's what I tell people. You know, it is a whole lot like nailing jello to a tree. But it's also fun. I mean, everybody, the whole point, isn't it, of festivals
mm-hmm.
is that you're supposed to have fun?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we give it our best shot.
Yeah. Well, what inspired you to start the Pagan Unity Festival, Tish?
Well, I just had a nervous breakdown one day. No. I thought it would be... it's one of those things that seemed like a really good idea at the time.
Yes, yes.
And then you go, what were you thinking? Why did you think this? I just thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to have this sort of opportunity to come together with other people and like-minded and have big ritual and have, you know, just it would just be cool. And
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So there you have it. and we did it, and it worked out pretty good. The first year we lost $4, went $4 a mole.
That's pretty good for the first year, really.
I thought it was really pretty good.
Yeah.
It was really pretty good.
Yeah.
And so we were like, well, that worked out pretty good. Let's do it again next year. And so we did. The first year was a one day, because I'm not really as crazy as people think I am. It was a one day. It was from, like, I don't remember, 9 in the morning, 8 in the morning till dark. And then go home. Everybody go home. And we had a lot of food that was donated to us. It was the year of the bagels. So if anybody ever says anything to you about Puff and bagels, that's why. Because I had a friend who worked for a bagel company here in town, and they threw away their bagels. And the guy was looking for somebody to give them to. And we said, ooh, pick us. And he did. So we had, I don't know, hundreds and thousands and millions of bagels. It was incredible. And so we had, so that was primarily what we had. Here, have bagels and cream cheese. It's good. You'll love it. And so it just kind of grew from there. And I thought, well, I didn't screw up and nobody died. Everybody seemed like they had a good time. Let's do it again. And
mm-hmm,
so now
yeah.
I don't, you know, I think if I died, they would prop me up in a corner and they'd have Puff anyway. I'm positive of it.
Well, tell me something. How do you manage to keep your staff focused on what needs to be done?
Who said I did? Who told you that? That's a lie.
Well, it looks like
it. Terrible lie.
I've attended Puff, and it's just very well organized and as far as I can see, it just looks like everybody is focused and knows what they need to do, and I was just wondering how you do it.
Well, I think I have amazing people, and they're dedicated to this ideal of having a great festival and everybody having a wonderful time, and they want it. They want it. They want everybody to be happy. And that's, I think that's part of it. And I tell them up front what I expect. This is like a big party in your house. And you're the host, and what would you do if you had, well, 400 people at your house? What would you do if you were throwing a big party? You'd make sure there was food. You'd make sure that there was toilet paper. You know, what would you do? And so you are, this is your job. You are the public face of this festival. And, I mean, we, you know, things go wrong, but we're really good at not letting anybody know that things go wrong. And, you know, we've gone into festival, oh, my God, you know, tore up, emotionally completely drained. 2010, we had a flood here in Nashville, in Middle Tennessee,
right,
area.
Yeah.
And we lost, the first person that died in that flood was a staff member. And not only was he a staff member, but he had been a staff member from the time he was 16 years old, and he was one of the Coven children. He was a Coven child.
Yeah.
Not that he was a child, but, I mean, he had been a Coven child. And
right.
So, and then my daughter's house was probably 75% of it was destroyed. My mother's house had damage. And one, two, three or four other staff members going into PUF either lost everything or lost a whole lot of everything.
Wow.
And we went into PUF 13 days later.
Wow.
Yeah,
and pulled it
that.
Off. And I don't know. I can tell you that that year I remember sitting with Star in a car in the parking lot and the two of us sobbing. Mm-hmm. I remember that Josh's father brought his ashes and we did a memorial for him on Saturday night at the bonfire down by the lake. And I will promise you, I don't remember anything else about that entire weekend. I remember nothing else.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but apparently nobody else knew. And I don't know that anybody appreciated how broken as a group we were. We were in absolute mourning and in complete shock.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, you just pull your socks up and you go the hell on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you have people depending on you, that's what you have to do. Oh, boy.
Well, you know, going through that, I can't really see anything that could be much worse. Unless, you
well,
know.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody has stuff, you know. One year we weren't sure if, you know, if Billy's mother was going to live because she's been fighting for a couple of years now. She's been fighting cancer, and she is, I'm happy to say she's in remission. But leading up to PUF one year, it was like, wow, oh, my God, I don't know if we're going to make it. And then this year, my mother was very ill, as I said, in April. And so I did 8 days at the hospital, and we did 3 weeks at Trevecca Health Care Center. And I took her home and, you know, and ensconced her in her home. And she lives with her sister, which, thank God, and went to PUF. I mean, I had no, I went in very depleted this year. I will admit that. So, and some, you know, some years are better than others, and we just keep doing it. And a couple of years ago, we had a lady that came in, and she did wonderful workshops. But she upset my people, because I had people come to me after her class, and I said, that lady, that she said that most festivals only last 5 years.
Mm.
Is that true? And I was like, well, I don't know. It could be. And I said, but what are you freaking out about? You know, this is like our 13th year or something, or 12th year or whatever. I said, what are you freaking out? If it is only 5 years as the average lifespan, we've already gone down the road from that. Okay? So it's all good. But apparently that is. It is. It's she said that 5 years, which I thought was very interesting.
Wow. Well, now you talked about several projects that you're doing, Tish, and I'm wondering if you want to add anything to that, and also maybe you could tell us how the rest of us, the pagan community, can help you reach the goals that you've set for the projects you have on your plate.
Oh, okay. The church, it's a matter of finding enough people that are willing to take the positions that need to be taken, you know? And when we started out, the first meeting that we ever had, and I said, I can't do this by myself. So if y'all can't step up to the plate, this is not going to happen. And I would say that out there, you know, in the greater cosmos, if you have something that you're trying to do, don't do it all by yourself. If people aren't willing to help you, if people aren't willing to help you, then just don't do it. Stay home. And don't be afraid to ask for help. You know, I ask for help daily from the gods and others. And so I feel like I'm getting some help for that. And the other day I was saying, you know, we really would like, we'd like a place, and we feel like we really need a, you know, a brick and mortar. And somebody said, well, you know what? It's time to have a fundraiser, and here's what we can do. Oh, well, good. Okay. That's a good idea. You be in charge of it. And I've learned to say that. It's a good idea. You be in charge of it. So we're doing that, and I feel like I've got a lot of help. And we're doing, and I know it sounds like I never sleep, but that's not true. And I really do sleep, and I have really good people. And this year for PUF, one of the things, and I've been doing it a little bit every year, is kind of releasing some of the jobs. So we've got a guy who's doing website. I mentioned Star a while ago. Star is in charge of workshops and classes, and Byron is in charge of rituals and people that want to do rituals. And so I'm spreading it out so it's not all me, because you can't do it if it's all you. I feel the same way about the church. And we're also doing, we call ourselves doing TV. We have done a couple of shows for something called, humorously, the Mystic Coffee Hour, and it's cable access, which is always an adventure. And we've got a couple of shows in the can. They're pretty good. We didn't, for people who didn't know what they were doing, and we're going to sit down and kind of rethink how we want to do it, or how we want to, who we want, and what we want to present. Pardon. And that's kind of fun, but that's only a couple hours, a couple of times a month, so it's not nearly. Because we've got somebody who is doing the editing, we've got somebody who's the technical director, and all that kind of stuff. So it's not nearly as crazy or as time-consuming as you think, and it's kind of fun, and we like it. And I have one book at the publisher, so Willow Tree has one book, which for some reason I'm writing murder mysteries. I don't know why. And the second book is finished. Well, it's finished. I'm doing rewrites and edits, and then I'm going to do the rewrites for, or the additions to Chasing the Rainbow, and then I've got some pagan books to write. So that's probably really busy. But anybody that wants to, we're going to do some fundraisers for Sanctuary of Light. Anybody that wants to help, step up, donate a dollar, anything, that, you know, I'll take whatever help anybody wants to give us. And that's the thing, I think, for a long time in community, the priestesses, the priests, the whatever, did all the work. And we've got to be able to say, come on, help us out, pick that up. Can you take the trash out? Would you, you know, put those hot dogs in the water? We've got to pull together as a team. I haven't seen teamwork. We need to see teamwork. At PUF, I think you see teamwork.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we are a team, and that's why I'm going in. We're a team. And, you know, I beat that drum. So that's what people can do. People can pick it up and they can help out. What can I do to help you? Those words are the most important words.
Yeah.
What can I do to help you?
Right.
Yeah. So you hear that, everybody listening? Don't be shy. Step up to the plate. And just go up and ask somebody, do you see working there? What can I do to help?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's dragging the trash down to the dumpster, walk up and say, hey, can I help you with that?
You know, Oberon is fond of saying, you can always tell who the pagan, the original, you know, some of the first pagans were, pagan leaders, whatever you want to call them, big nose pagans, because they're the ones picking up the trash after the festival, you know?
Yeah, they're the ones, you know, scrubbing the toilets and standing on the chow line.
Seriously,
and,
I mean, really, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we
they're,
had the
they're
best
doing
time.
The good work.
I, have to give Oberon a plug because we had him last year. We're having him back this year because we loved him so much.
Yeah.
He is a tireless social butterfly. He was all over site. He talked to everybody. He went down to the tents. He went to the cabins. He went to the bonfire. He was out on the floor dancing. Everybody was like, gosh, he's talking to the little kids. He's talking to, you know, he was there to see and to be seen and to let people know that we're all in this together.
Yeah.
And I think he did just the most admirable job of that.
Aww.
He was just, I mean, he was everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and he said Saturday night, I know what time he went to bed Saturday night. He went to bed Saturday night as the sun came up. And we had a light, an early flight. And I mean, like a very early flight. And I bet he didn't get whatever. So he's trying to zip around, getting all this stuff together to get in the van with my husband for the airport run. And he said, I don't know why I'm so disorganized. After all, I've had a full 15 minutes of sleep. Probably not much of an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he did that later on, about 2-3 months later, when he went to Starwood. He was, just a weird, freaky set of circumstances. He didn't get a chance to sleep. He was up for about 3 days by the time I ran into him at Starwood. Yeah. And he just turned 70 last November 30th. So
I know.
I don't know.
The rest of us to shame.
You know, somebody said, and I wish I could remember, but somebody, it might have been Morning Glory, said that Oberon acted like the battery for the pagan community, that he had so much energy that, you know, he could spread it around. His dad lived to be something like 98 years old, and he was still playing golf all the time and had all his faculty. I mean, he's got the constitution of a I shouldn't say horse, because they're not really all that healthy, but, you know. He's got a very strong constitution.
Strong constitution. Yes, he did. I was quite impressed with him. So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's how big noses ought to be. They ought to be going, hey, how you doing? Isaac Bonowitz came to Puff, 10 years ago. And he made sure that he went down Merchant Row and he bought something from every single vendor.
Wow.
Wow, how about that? Because he felt like we should all put our money where our mouths were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's pretty amazing. Kish, do you see anybody, I mean, you know, some of the founders of paganism, well, most of them, are getting pretty old, and we've had quite a few, well, Isaac was one of them. We've lost quite a few.
Yeah.
Where do you see the pagan community heading in the future? Do you see anybody picking up the reins here?
I think that people are picking up the reins. I mean, I don't think that, you know, well, you still got Oberon. We'd have to beat him and take the reins away from him. But, you know, we've got the Dorothy Morrisons of the world, and we've got, we've got people, Grimassis, I was just thinking today about, how that people are, that there's this next generation, and we've got a lot of really good people that are writing a lot of really good things and showing up to festivals and doing what needs to be done. And then our job, Christopher Pinsak, I mean, holy God, look at him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a one-man, I don't even know what.
Well, that's why I'm asking, because you mentioned Dorothy Morrison. You know, these people are getting older, you know, and I'm thinking with the younger ones. Christopher Pinsak is one, but I'm not out on the, you know, I live in the middle of nowhere, so I don't go to a lot of pagan festivals, so I don't really know what's happening as far as that goes. But do you see any younger people coming up, like around Christopher Pinsak's age? Or
I do. You know? I do see that.
Oh, good.
And some of them come to Puff, and I also think that our job also is to train the next generation below that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids that come to Puff and they're 16, 17, 18 years old, you know, Yeah. People drive me crazy. And here, I'm going to take a pet peeve for a second. People drive me crazy that say, well, our kids, you know, we're just letting them be what they want to be, and we don't want to make them be pagan or whatever. I promise you that if you were in the Catholic Church, you'd be raising your kids Catholic.
Yes.
So I want to know, if you're a pagan, why in the name of Zeus you're not raising your kid pagan?
Yeah.
And showing them what they need to be doing, and training them up in ritual and all the rest of it, and giving them books to read. Why are we not doing this? So that makes me a little crazy.
Because kids need some kind of direction just to help them get started on a spiritual path. You know what I'm saying?
Well, exactly, and it's hard enough anyway. And then there's all these kids out there, and we've talked about this, there's all these kids out there, and they're getting all their ideas off the internet, for God's sake. Nobody's training them, and that scares me to death.
Yeah.
You know, because they're doing binding spells, and they're doing, all the rest of it. And one of the things that, you know, we're going to do, and we've done it in the past, and we're going to really kind of push a little bit, is that our tweens and our teens are in charge of lunch. They're in charge of making the sandwiches, putting it in the bag, serving the people when they come through the line. And that's their contribution, and they've got to know how vitally important it is for them to make that contribution, how desperately we need them, and how it is their responsibility, and we expect it from them.
Well,
and I think that's important.
Yeah. Sorry. I think that young people feel, it helps them to feel important because they're contributing to the community, you know?
Right, and they have to, it makes them feel important.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've got two teenagers that are, and they're teenagers on staff that are family, like their mom and daddy's on staff, you know? But they're so excited that they get to wear the tab that says, you know, hey, I'm on staff. And they're excited about it.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see that.
I am too, but I'm glad to see them be excited about it. And they have to understand about service, because if not, then this all falls apart.
Right.
It can't be allowed to fall apart. This is too important. This religious movement is too important in this time in which we are living.
Right. I totally agree. And we don't have the resources like other mainstream churches. I mean, you know, we don't all go to church and put $5 in the basket every Sunday. We don't have money. And a lot of us, we're just different, you know. Our whole lifestyle is different. And so we don't make all that much money, and so we have to do it all ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have to, and I think we've got to get beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We don't go to church and put $5 in the plate. I think we need to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was just fixing to say, you know, and start by just supporting every pagan shop owner out there, anybody that writes a book, makes music.
Hallelujah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, can I just say something about that for really? Can I get on my soapbox again?
If you
download a book and you don't pay for it, and you're supposed to pay for it, you are stealing from the person who wrote it. And I'm sorry how poor you are, and I hate it for you.
Yeah.
But it takes me, and I'm slow, it takes me a year to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
So a year of my life has gone into this book. Willow Tree has gone to the trouble and the expense to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
It gets distributed, and you're going to steal it from me.
Mm-hmm.
Or Dorothy, or Merv, or Pinzac, or anybody else. And you know, and I've had this argument, seen this argument, but I'm really poor. Oh, I hate that for you. If you're so, get a second job.
But is that a reason for the person that produced it to be poor, you know? That's my...
Yeah.
Right.
You're poor, but you don't go in the grocery store and steal a pack of ham, because they'll arrest you for it.
No.
Yeah, I'm hearing about this more and more, and it just boggles my mind that people would do that kind of thing. Of course, I know how I felt. Now, Green Egg is free, okay? We give it away. But
right, yeah.
But you wouldn't believe, this really boggles my mind, you wouldn't believe how many places, how many websites I have found where they stole our stuff and put it out there. And
mm-hmm.
they had, and then there was one that had books by, lots of books by pagan
oh,
authors. You know,
I remember
that.
Yeah,
and it's just a really creepy feeling. You feel you just feel so violated and invaded. And I mean,
was that
anybody
a website? I'm sorry, was that a website that did that?
It
yeah,
was.
By a person. By a pagan
person. I saw it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think I did point it out to you, yeah. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it had just
happened. We had gone and contacted all the authors that let them know that she had full copies of their books up there. Dorothy was in there.
That's it. That's
yeah.
the one I was trying
to do. And Oberon and...
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
just lots of books. When I seen it, it made me angry.
Yeah.
Well, and she was really quite ugly when she was made to take it down.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That
yeah, because she's like,
that's
when
right.
some people
that's
just, you know,
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. And some people are just so, you know, touchy. I'm like, you realize
yeah.
you're a thief.
She had no clue as to why anybody would be upset. None. Even when it was explained to her. What is this woman doing, pagan? Jeez, I'm sorry. I just, well, you like to think that you're, you know, people in your community aren't going to rip you off. And... all the time.
Well, one thing we've got to remember about people in our community is they are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And just like anyone else, they're going to feel entitled to do as they please.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's what I think what everyone should remember is just think of it this way. What if you put yourself in someone else's shoes? What if you spent all that time? What if you recorded a song or wrote a book? Or anything like that, and you put it up, and someone did that to you.
Well, there's a case right now, LaSara Firefox. She 2004 or so, wrote a book called Sexy Witch. Wonderful book. It took off like wildfire. My husband read it and loved it, but everybody should read this, men and women. LaSara does workshops with this. This is how she makes her money, and it's a brand,
right.
and it's copyrighted, and somebody else just filed for a copyright and wanted Sexy Witch, you know, to use that term, and they were going to do coffee mugs and oh, God knows what else. And so LaSara had to raise $1,500 within a matter of just like 3 days to pay a lawyer to defend her. Now, she won. She did win. But $1,500?
I thought she would. Good.
Yeah. She did.
Yeah.
She did. And she thanked everybody. I mean, you know, people sent in whatever they could. Now she needs to raise another $1,500 to help protect the rest of her work that she's going to be doing because she's starting next month. I think she's starting some sort of a internet TV thing or something. But this is ridiculous. And the thing I didn't get with Green Egg is it's free. Why don't they just put up a link to our website? But no, I've seen people put up whole issues on other websites.
Yeah.
Well, okay, before we run out of time, y'all, Tish, where can we find you on the internet, and how can our listeners contact you for anything that you offer?
Oh, thank you. You can find everything pretty much at www.goddessandthemoon.com. And our number at the shop is 615-251-9833. Call us and we'll take care of your whatever you got.
Okay.
And thanks, y'all. Thank you,
thank you, Tish.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Next week we have somebody from a company named Dawala. I'm sorry, I cannot think of her name right now, but she's going to tell us about the hoop circle, which is what Native Americans use when they plant their crops. And she's going to tell us some really interesting things that we don't know. You've probably never heard about. So join us next week. And that's our show for tonight.
Merry night, everyone.
Okay.